Well, hi, everybody. I'm Cynthia Garrett, and welcome back to this week's session. And if you've been with us the last couple of weeks, then you know that we've been having just such a wonderful conversation with Pastor Kemi Colioso, who co-pastors Jubilee Church in London with her husband, Tope Colioso. And she also leads the Courage Conference for Women, which I have been fortunate to speak at in the past and will again, God willing. And then, of course, Christina Reynolds, our musical blessing here on the show, and also just a blessing as a sister in Christ to have her here. And I asked Kemi if we could actually film longer and bring you another episode for this week, because we've been having such a great conversation. And last week, we ended talking about purpose and just the advice that you gave about purpose. And there was a question that came in from the audience, Pastor Kemi, and I'd love to put it out here as we start this week's episode. And Emma says, I'm struggling at the moment. I've decided it's time I made a career, but I haven't found that passion yet or job that I want to go into. Any advice? And I just love the ability to take a question like this, Pastor Kemi, because, you know, this is a young person, a young woman, and, you know, I think as young people today try to find what their career path should be in the world, you know, what advice do you have for her? And then how do we as a team of believers, brothers, sisters, mothers, aunts in Christ come around young people to help them navigate a question like this?
Yeah, great question, Emma. I love that question. I will answer it, but let me just give you a little bit of background about me. So initially, I, like you, didn't know what I wanted to do. I don't know how old Emma is, but I'm assuming she's much younger than me. So initially I thought, as a young girl, I didn't know what I wanted to do. All I knew was that I needed to get out of my house. So I basically saw myself through uni, and went to do a course that I could, any course that I could get into. And then I started to think, actually, I think I want to teach. I think I'll be a teacher. And I remember studying and going to my first teaching practice. Anyway, standing in front of this class and teaching, I walked away from her. I hate it. I absolutely hate teaching. But I was 2 years into my course. And I was like, I don't want to do this, but it costs money, so I'm going to stay here and I don't have any alternative, so I'm going to finish this course. I finished the course and I vowed never to stand in front of a class again, so I was left with, what are you going to do? So I took on any job, and I'm a firm believer in, you know, don't be idle, just do something, and in the doing you will find something. So I took on a job, you know, working in a sandwich shop or something like that. And come summer, I thought, okay, I need a little bit more money. So I did some extra work and I ended up in a school again. I thought, Lord, are you kidding me? I don't want to teach. But it was like a summer school for children with disabilities. And as I was there helping, I realized that the part of this job that I loved was not so much the teaching the kids, but it was the caring for the kids. It was working alongside the nurses. And I remember just thinking about it, thinking, could it be that that's where God's leading me to? Well, what's the harm? Let me, you know, look into it. So I looked into nursing, and the more I looked into it, the more excited I got about it. And I went on and I became a nurse, and it was the best, you know, like I say, I worked as a nurse for 25 years. I worked in palliative care. I loved it. And I'm saying that, Emma, because at the moment, things are all up in the air anyway. And I think, find a job that is, you know, it might not be what you want to do right now. But whilst you're in that job, begin to pray about where, you know, what is your passion? Write down, what are your gifts? What are your abilities? What are you trained to do? And what are your hobbies? Those are four things. Gifts, abilities, what are you trained to do? And what are your hobbies? Write them all down on a chart. And begin to look at it and look at jobs around that area. And begin to say, actually, which one gets me excited? Now, you might do it and you might not like it. I'm a firm believer, nothing is wasted in God's economy. I'll tell you that because my teaching degree, because I did get that degree in the end, it came in handy because as we began to pastor the church, I realised that actually doing face-to-face, hands-on nursing was a bit stretching for me. Palliative care nursing is quite emotionally tasking. Being a pastor is quite emotionally tasking. So I was coming home and I was like, I was getting compassion fatigue. You know, if the boys hurt themselves, I'd be like, oh, for goodness sake. Do you know what I've been doing today? I have been looking after patients with cancer. Take your toe away. It was getting a little bit like that. And I thought, okay, this is not helpful. But I felt that God still wanted me in that field. Despite being a pastor, God still wanted me in that field. I didn't believe God wanted me out of it. And then God said, you remember that degree in teaching? I was like, oh, yeah. Anyway, long story short, I ended up lecturing in end-of-life care. Nothing is wasted. So whatever you can find to do now, do it. And in the meantime, begin to explore other areas and everything will come together for good. I hope that's helpful, Emma.
I think it's very helpful. At least, you know, as I see it, and I think about my own journey, I was thinking as you were talking, and it is very, very true. Nothing is wasted. I mean, there was a time where I left secular television and I kind of was like, I don't want to ask another stupid question about what dress are you wearing? Cause I don't care. You know? I really want to ask, are you saved? But I'm on this secular network and they don't want
to. Who are you wearing?
Yeah, I was just done. I was done. And I really was just burnt out on it for a while. And it's so interesting because when God brought me to this, it was like, oh, I get to ask, are you saved? But that TV skill that you had, like lots of, and preparation, and all of a sudden, you know, he trained me up over here where for years I was teaching Bible study to a bunch of college kids, not knowing what, I don't know how I got here, Lord. I was at the Oscars 6 years ago, you know? You know, and here I am in Kansas. Doesn't look like Hollywood. You know, it was so different, but I kept saying yes to God. I just kept saying yes, and I kept trying, and I just kept following what I thought was the goodness of God. And you know, Proverbs 3 verses 5 and 6, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him. So if I saw him in it, I was going. You know, if it was the fire department needed a girl who could show up and teach Bible study, and it came to me as an opportunity, I would do it because I saw God in it. It was really that childish and simple. But I think about it now and I realize it was just all training. It was all training for what he already knew, where he was already taking me, and he never intended to waste any of my skill set or any of the training. And even the bad things that we go through, he uses.
Absolutely.
He uses. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and Kemi, you've mentioned before you know, the things that he delivered you out of, and I'm imagining that you have this great wisdom and compassion to share because of what God has brought you through. And so I just thought it would be a shame if we get away from having you as a guest here on the sessions and not talk about the goodness of God in your life. What has he delivered you through, and why do you shine so brightly today?
Thank you. Where do I start? Let's start from day one. So when I was born, I was the second child. I have a brother who's 4 years older than me. And I came into the world on the exact day of his birthday. So we both share a birthday. And he always says to me that I ruined his fourth birthday. And I said, no, you have you got a present on your fourth birthday that has been with you for whole of your life. No other person can boast that they have the same present when they were four. But unfortunately, I was born with a congenital heart defect, so I had a hole in the heart. Mm-hmm. And this is years ago when it was like kids born with the hole in the heart were very, very, I mean, these days it's more, the surgery is a lot more smarter, but then it was a pioneering surgery to operate on a child that small who had a hole in the heart. Now I was born in the late 60s, so we might as well just call it the 70s, okay? Let's just nudge it into the 70s. But then I had to spend a year in hospital in an oxygen tank. And my mother couldn't stay with me because, like I say, it was many years ago when mums couldn't really stay in the hospital and she had a four-year-old that. So I guess kind of bonding with your mum, science tells us that's quite an important thing for a child. So a year of my life was spent in hospital. I got home, heart fixed and all that. But early on, I never remember much about my dad. It's as I grow up, I keep thinking, where was he? You know, he didn't tend to be around much. My mom then had another child, so there were three of us, and she struggled to look after us. So my brother went into foster care. I eventually went into foster care. As a child, you don't think anything of it. I said, you know, my foster dad was lovely. He worked for Walls Ice Cream, so I had ice cream on a weekend. But my foster mom was awful, and if I did anything wrong, she made me eat soap. And not even a clean bar. We're talking, they've already washed their hands, eat the soap. That was the punishment we got. And so that was kind of my earliest memories. Eventually, we all returned back to mum, and I think it's just that she couldn't cope with three kids on her own. She was working three jobs. That really was it. And then she thought, okay, that's it. I'm sending you all to Nigeria to go and stay with your dad because I can't cope. So she put three of us, 10, 6, 3, on a plane unaccompanied and sent us to Lagos. I don't know why I'm laughing. I'm just like, what?
I know why you're laughing. It's like, wow, mom.
I mean, my boys are 20-something and I panic because they're in Singapore. she put us on the plane, sent us to her dad. So we ended up with my dad, who I didn't really know. So we spent a year with our dad, and eventually mum came and they tried to make a go of the marriage. And everything seemed fine. You know, the whole family was together. Fast forward a few years, at the age of 9, I get involved in this massive accident. And I now break every single bone in my body. I fractured my skull, I broke both my legs, my arms, everything. So for the second time in my life, they didn't think I would pull through. They actually thought, because with my hole in the heart, there was a 50-50% chance that I wasn't going to make it. With this accident, there was another 50% chance that I wasn't going to make it. But after another 3 months in hospital, I pulled through. Now, being in hospital for 3 months as a 9-year-old without your parents, it's hard. So I think I grew up with a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, because I was fearful of everything. And some of it was my parents saying, do you not know what we've been through with you? Don't climb that wall. Don't cross that street. I was wrapped in cotton wool and not allowed to. I never took part in sports at all. I wasn't allowed to. So fast forward a few years, I'm now 13 years old. I'm an introvert, don't really have many friends. My sister was my best friend, she still is. And we're walking home from school one day, we get in, and we were always the first home. And I just noticed that the house felt different. I looked at her and I thought, something's wrong. It felt like we were burgled, but we weren't. So we sat on the edge of the bed and we just sat there. I just remember both of us just sitting, and I just remember feeling really scared and sick to the pit of my stomach. And my brother came home, and I can't remember, I don't think he knew what was happening either. Anyway, my dad finally came home that evening. He looked at all three of us and he goes, your mother's gone. And that was it. No explanation, nothing. We didn't know that they were having trouble. It was your mother's gone. Now, this is pre-mobile phone. We're in Nigeria. Not everyone's got a landline. He didn't tell us where she was. We didn't know where she was. 3 weeks, we didn't know where she was. And in my 13-year-old mind, I began to think, what does he mean by she's gone? Is she dead? Is she? Well, he wouldn't talk about it. And this is one thing about, you know, for any parents watching, especially from my culture, there's a whole lot of secrecy and shame, honor going on, and you keep things. And I did not understand what was going on. 3 weeks later, my mom rings and she says, come and meet me in my friend's house. And I went to see her, and all I can remember is having anger just boiled on the inside of me. And I was like, I don't understand how you can leave us, just like walk out on three children just like that. She tried to explain the best she could. And as an adult now, I can, you know, I empathize with some of the things they shielded us from. But within very few months, both my parents then found different partners. And we spent most of the time with my dad, and he now had a new wife who started to have children, and things just changed. It's almost as if we were in the way. So he had this new family, and we were just these kids who were just in the way. And that's when the neglect started. If we were in this country, we would have been taken into care again. But because we were in Nigeria, we weren't taken into care. I wore the same school uniform from the time I started secondary school, which was from about my second year when my mum left. I wore the same uniform till I finished. So I had the same uniform for about 5 years. Thankfully, I was a skinny little thing, so I didn't fill out. I just had to let the hem down bit by bit. And my teachers would say, "Why is your uniform so short?" I couldn't bring myself to tell them that we were just being neglected. We ended up having, if you had two meals a day, that was a good day. My dad would let us have one meal a day. He wouldn't give us money for transport. We'd have to walk in the hot sun, and we're talking miles. I used to get heat stroke constantly, but he would say I was lazy, so he'd get the stick out and make me do chores. I mean, it just went from bad to ridiculous. And then the verbal abuse started. My brother he got caned a lot. I mean, till today, he still struggles. Because of my medical history, my dad was a little bit scared to use the cane on me, so he spared me, but my two siblings got it the most. But what he would do, he would say words. So his favorite word was, "You would not amount to anything. You're absolutely useless." Now, when you hear that every single day, "You're absolutely useless, you won't amount to anything," it goes in there. You know, you can't shake it off. So I began to believe that about myself. And he said to me once, he said, "The best thing that can happen would be for a man to marry you, and that way he can take you off my hands." And it was just like, it was rough. My sister was 13 when she's a lot more outgoing than me. And my dad was about to whip her with a belt one day, and there was a big argument, and he kicked her out of the house. She was 13. And she went to live with her teacher, never returned home, and he never once went to go and look for her. I was just like, she's 13. It was at night. He did not even get up. I left home when I was about 16. I basically just looked after myself. There was one thing, you know, in it all, I gave my life to Christ at the age of 17. But I believe right through, God was just there with me every step of the way. Because I was put in some very compromising situations. And then all of a sudden, things would just switch and I'd be fine. You know, where men would want to take advantage of you, when you have no father to look after you, that's what happens. And it would just get to that bit and somehow I'd escape it. Yeah. Every time I seemed to have money to pay for what I needed or food, God would just provide. But you see, the problem is, I thought it was me. I thought I was so clever at navigating this life. I don't need a father. So pride set in. You know, this, I don't need God as a father kind of figure, because men are, you know, this is what my dad did. But bit by bit, God began to tell me, actually, no, it's not you. It's not because you've worked hard or you're, I mean, my dad never once asked me where I was living, never once asked me how I was making money, never came to look for me when both of us never came to look for us. And I managed to scrape some money together, get a ticket and fly back to London. I went to tell him like the day before I was flying, and he just looked at me and went, "Oh." So you get an upbringing like that, and you begin to think of yourself as less than. You begin to either live a life of less than or live a life of, "I'm going to try it by my own power." So I would swing between the two. Oh, I might as well just find someone to marry me, because that's what my dad says I'm good for. Or actually, no, I'm going to fight this thing in my own power. Neither of them are right. And I just want to say, I'm so grateful. You know, we need to never stop preaching Jesus. Never stop preaching Jesus. My brother was a Christian. He sat me down one day and said, "You need Jesus." I said, "No, I don't." I said, "I've come this far without him. I don't need him." He said, "You do." And he led me to Christ. And I remember, even before he led me to Christ, whenever things were getting really awful in our house, like really, really, you know, there were fights, there were beatings, there were verbal, all kinds of stuff. We would sit there and he would sing a song, and the song went something, I won't sing it, but I'll say the words. It would be, "Why so downcast, oh my soul? Put your hope in God." put your hope in God. And we'd both sing it, and we'd sing it and sing it and sing it, and then we'd end up laughing. Because the truth of those words would wash through me. And bit by bit, God began to speak to me. And I thank God. I mean, I wasn't an overnight, ta-da, I'm great now. I held unforgiveness and anger towards my mum more than my dad. Because I was like, how could you let this happen to us? You are my mother. And it wasn't until I was married that I got rid of that unforgiveness. And I want to say, you know, unforgiveness is toxic. It is poison. It will stop you from accessing the goodness of God. And if anyone's listening and you're harboring unforgiveness, I beg you, let it go. Let it go. I remember it was in a women's conference that I cried out to God, I'm not happy. I don't know why. And God said, it's because you haven't forgiven your mother. And I'm saying to God, but do you know what she left me in, the mess she left us in? I mean, she spiraled out of control herself. So she wasn't even in a position to help us. But all I could remember is me just looking at her that day and saying, I can't believe you've done that. Forgiveness is important. The minute I let my guard down and just said to Lord, I surrender to you, I forgave her. I remember breaking down that day. You know, don't ask me what they were preaching, but I know God met with me. And that day I hadn't spoken to my mum in years. I picked up the phone and I said, Mum, I'm coming home. She couldn't believe it. She couldn't believe it. And you know, I know time is going, but if there's anything, I want to say that no matter what you have gone through, no matter what the mess is, no matter what the test is, you know, we've been saying it right through these sessions we've had, nothing is wasted in God's economy and everything is for a reason. Today, I can testify that God saw me through every single day. And, you know, yes, I bear scars. I bear, you know, I have a physical scar. The scar on my back runs the length of my back from my operation. But this is what God told me. He said, your scars are an evidence that you were healed. Your emotional scars are evidence that you came through. Your psychological scars are evidence that you are healed. Do not fall victim to the fact that the enemy still wants to keep you in bondage. You know, recognize that God has done it. He has set you free. And he who God sets free is free indeed. There are two levels of freedom. He set you free and then you're free indeed. That is recognizing, oh my goodness, I am so free. And so today I can testify, I love my dad. Unfortunately, my mom died before I could see her. And this is why I want anyone who's listening, if you hold on, forgiveness, please forgive. I forgave my mom. I was about to buy my ticket when I got a phone call to say she passed away. I thank God that I did that. I struggle sometimes as to why God took her home. It was 20 years in June since she died. I'm like, Lord, you knew I was going to see her. Could you not just keep her alive for a few more months? God said to me, you did the most important thing. And she knew that you forgave her. And she knew Christ. And so, you know, we have a message. And we got to, you know, for as long as God gives me breath, I will step, you know, that's why the conference is called Courage. I'm not the most courageous person. I am, you know, my upbringing just taught me to cower away from everything. But because I know what Christ has done in me, I will step out every single time and testify to what God has done. I will decrease and he will increase every single time, and he gets the glory. And I think I better stop talking.
Yeah, because I think you've got me in tears and Christine.
Sorry.
Keep talking.
Yeah. It's, Kemi, you know, but it really, I'll tell you, it makes me so aware of the truth and the beauty of why the woman at the well couldn't wait to evangelize, you know, all of Samaria, and of why the woman cried at his feet and poured perfume and oil. You know, it's the much that we've received, knowing yeah. what we've come from, that makes us, I think, the most effective weapons for Christ, because I don't know that you can love much if you haven't been forgiven much.
Right.
I don't even know that you can be that. I guess there are people who can be, but I know that a lot of my compassion and my desire to see young women set free is because I know how much I've been set free. Well, I think, unfortunately, we're out of time, and But you have to come back. You have to come back. You have to come back another time so that we can, you know, check in and talk some more. You have.
Is there anything for you? I'll do.
I appreciate it, Pastor Kemi, and I have to tell you, you know, I have such a love for the women of God that the Lord has highlighted to me as important and as really making a contribution for such a time as this. And I believe it's a unique time historically. It's a unique season, I think, for women, even around the world. When women started to rise, it was very secular. But I really have believed in the last year that godly women, you know, are being given a place. And I think it's because God loves his order, and he loves what he created. You know, he loves what he created, and there is an order to what he created, especially in our homes. And so I just love that we're ending here with our children, you know, and it all does stem from our own identity, right? And our ability to, you know, be healed and come under the Lord and have things correct in our lives, you know, correctly ordered in our lives and in our homes and in our kids' lives.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely a ripple in a pond, and you guys. And so, you know, everything about these sessions is to encourage you to learn how to walk out your faith. You know, I always say we don't need another talk show in the world, but we need a walk show, you know? Yeah. So I hope that you've been encouraged the last few weeks with Pastor Kemi Colioso. And I hope that if you want to learn more about her, you'll go check them out at jubileechurchlondon.org. You know,
yeah.
I know you've seen that running across the screen. So I just want to say that, you know, I love all of you guys. And for all of you watching, thank you for your time every week on the sessions. And I'll see you next week.
Thank you.
So I will not worry, for you are good. I will not be anxious, for you are good. I'm gonna keep singing, oh, you are good, you're always good. And in every way, oh, you are good. And all I can say is you are good. Oh, this never changes, you are good, you're always good.
Hi, everyone. I'm Cynthia Garrett, and thank you for letting me be a part of your journey in Christ, and thank you for joining me every week for the sessions. I just want to encourage you to get a copy of my new book, I Choose Victory, Moving from Victim to Victor. I am super excited about this book because for those of you who know my story, I've got a lot of wreckage in my testimony, but God has given me a lot of victory, and he's taught me, most importantly, how to choose victory over the narratives in my life that want to tell me I can't, you know? So for those of you who are wrestling with things that are telling you you'll never do this, you'll never do that, you can't achieve this, you can't do that, that is a lie. That's a lie from the pit of hell. And I want to help you choose the victory over that lie. So you can go to ichoosevictory.com. You can find out everything you want to know about how to get the book. You can go to online booksellers and bookstores everywhere. I'm Cynthia Garrett. I love you guys.